welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and today I am joined by the author of a fascinating book about American studies and film history, kicking off our holiday season here at Turn the Page. I am so excited to hop into this book. So welcome. Could I ask you to introduce yourself and your book, please?
Of course. My name is Vaughn Joy, and I am a film historian, kind of, but largely I'm just very interested in pop culture and the ways that we kind of fill our empty spaces in life, the down moments, the things that make life more bearable and entertaining and interesting and fun. So I have studied comic books and ancient mythology and Christmas films and all sorts of things, and the kind of complicated apparatuses around those fun, interesting cultural media pieces.
That's great. I love those things too. Very interested in them. And I really like the lens that you take on Christmas movies here, Hollywood Christmas movies from about mid-century. Yeah, we've talked a little bit about yourself, your research. I first encountered you through Review Roulette, which is a super cool newsletter that you had. Could you talk a little bit about maybe how you developed this interest in sort of pop culture and media as a lens on American society, and how that shaped, your arrival at this project?
Of course. And thank you so much. Review Roulette is my passion project, and it is still running. It's just moved. I've moved it to a new website called Black and White and Red All Over that houses much more than just Review Roulette, lots of public scholarship in different directions on American studies and more. But yeah, popular culture has just always been this very fascinating thing that when I was a kid, when you stay home sick from school, right? As a kid, you watch like The Price is Right and you watch this like daytime television, right? And it's cultural pieces that you don't normally encounter as a child unless you are kind of staying home from school. And I think that's really one of the places where my interest in how we pass time really started. So there's that. And then there's also just that film is really fun to study. And I get to spend all of my time watching fascinating art pieces and thinking about them. And what more could you really want out of life? So for instance, on Review Roulette, I take a different film every week that normally it's one that I hadn't seen. I'm trying to fill in gaps of my own kind of film knowledge because there are so many films from so many different cultures and thinkers and time periods. So there are lots of fascinating ones. I try to limit it to Hollywood, but I watch a film from the 20th century and I spin a roulette wheel every week for how I'm going to watch the film. And then I write a review from that kind of theoretical lens or with certain things in mind. So I go into these films with research questions. And the point of it is to, as you say, like tell us something about American society, about the time that it was made, about the content of it, about who in it might have commentaries that we can explore more to understand humanity or American society or other aspects of culture. And I find it fascinating, and I'm very happy that you are a fan.
I'm so glad to hear that it has moved, and I will drop a link in the show notes to your new website so that folks can check it out. The whole time that I spent a lot of time reading the back catalog, and I loved it. And I thought that, it would be so great for, upperclassmen or first year grad students who just have to like, get used to theory and how you use it and like studying theoretical frameworks. I think that would have been such a useful framework for me when I was in my early PhD period. I think it's a great, great resource, and it has introduced me just to so many cool movies.
I'm so glad to hear that, and thank you. Yeah, that it really did start with that. I was giving a lecture at UT Austin. I was invited to introduce an engineering class to film theory because they were doing a class called Energy at the Movies. It's fascinating. There's also the professor who was running that class has a PBS documentary called Energy at the Movies. You should check it out. And it's about how engineers watch movies from their kind of professional standpoint. And in giving this lecture, it was a rapid 90-minute like crash course on like, here's why we think about film, here's why we watch film, here's how we analyze film. And I did a truncated kind of methodology of that. And I said that I was doing that on social media, and a lot of people were like, I would really love to read just how you analyze film. So this newsletter came out of that as a way to get not only undergrads and grad students into film theory and analysis, but really anyone to be able to learn more about critical thinking when it comes to media and that media literacy that is, I think is so desperately needed at the moment with the advent of AI and so much propaganda in the world at the moment. It's a really important time to be able to critically read the cultural media that you're consuming, which is also kind of the starting point for my book.
Absolutely. So this is adapted from your dissertation, is that correct, this book?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So what sparked your particular interest in Christmas films? And yeah, what sparked your original interest? And how did your argument develop? Like, did you know from the beginning what you were going to argue? Did the argument reveal itself as you researched and watched? How did that work?
It definitely developed as I researched and watched. The starting point for this was that I had never studied film before my PhD and never really studied Hollywood. I was primarily a classicist until I did a one-year master's on the post-war period. And that's when I studied a comic book that was about an ancient goddess. So I was using classical reception kind of methodology for that. And during that master's, I had taken a course on film, and I just really fell in love with the idea that you could study film and just watch movies and then talk about them. Like, that's one of my favorite things to do. And I would love to do that for 4 more years to do a PhD in it. So I did. And in talking with that professor who became my supervisor, I knew I wanted to study the post-war period. I have a very soft fondness for the post-war period as just a really fascinating era to study. There are so many changes in our society at that time and changes in American identity and American mythologies. It's just a really rich cultural era to study, which every historian will say of their period, but I love the post-war period. And I wanted to focus on Hollywood. And I was really drawn to the idea of a genre study as a kind of control group where the genre has the tropes and themes that are iconic of it, and over a long time period, you can track changes in the genre and then think about the variables that kind of made those changes happen. And I hate horror films, so that's really like the go-to. There are so many fascinating, brilliant studies on horror films that really just tell us so much about American society. But I do love Christmas films, and I was looking at children's literature and children's media in that period, and my supervisor jokingly suggested Christmas films. And I was like, oh my God, It's a Wonderful Life and White Christmas and Miracle on 34th Street. And I was like, hands down, done, we're doing it. And then from there, in researching and watching, the argument really came through, and I was learning more about the problems facing Hollywood in that period. The films, I argue, have a clear demarcation of changes within them that map onto the issues in Hollywood, like the House Committee on Un-American Activities and anti-communism investigations. There's a Supreme Court ruling that breaks the studio system. and that has lots of financial kind of consequences for Hollywood that also influences the media. And there are also like lots of social and cultural changes outside of Hollywood. So it was a really rich moment to be thinking about a genre study over time. Christmas also, as I learned throughout all of this research, is so much more than I ever thought it was. It is such a rich American tradition. As it developed in American history, it's secular, it's diverse, and it's really as interesting to read as any other kind of cultural text in or cultural kind of category in American history. And it all kind of came together to be this unbelievably rich kind of source base for studying this period.
Yeah, it was sort of fascinating to learn that, not only did nascent, American Christmas traditions influence how it's depicted on film, but then like that the reverse then happened, that film sort of helped solidify a lot of like the traditions that we associate with like Christmas in America. We talked a little bit about your time frame, and the post-war period. I'd love to know how you went about choosing your film. This sounds like some were already, faves and sprang to mind immediately, but there are so many. Was it hard to narrow down your source base?
It was, and it was hard to limit a time period also. The time period that I go with is 1946 to 1961, which I think ultimately really worked because it's bookended with Frank Capra, and the last chapter of the book is about a quarter of the book. It is a behemoth of a chapter putting Walt Disney and Frank Capra together into conversation because they both have a Christmas film that comes out the same week in 1961. And for Disney, it's another high water mark in an upward trajectory of the Disney company. And for Capra, it's his final Hollywood film, and his career ends after that. So starting with It's a Wonderful Life, which is now considered by many to be the American Christmas film, and then going to a film that ends his career, I thought was a really enticing kind of bookending 15-year period to study. And for the films within that period, there are many. So I did limit it to major Hollywood studios and or directors, or ones that had major Hollywood stars, because I was trying to get at an audience who knew these films. There are many times that I read film texts or film histories where I have to go watch a film before I can understand what I'm reading in that book. And that's totally fine and good, and it's worth expanding our knowledge in that way, especially culturally, and being able to watch something and then dive deep into other people's analysis of it. But for this book, for this project specifically, I wanted something where we could kind of hit the ground running with a lot of my audience for a lot of the films, that there would be some sort of cultural recognition there. So I look at films like It's a Wonderful Life and Miracle on 34th Street, White Christmas, Disney's Babes in Toyland, The Bishop's Wife from 47. They're all films that are pretty recognizable, and The Apartment from 1960. So yeah, it shaped up in that kind of direction. Major studios, major directors, major stars, primarily.
I love that, we are talking about It's a Wonderful Life and The Apartment in the same breath because they're such different movies, but they also encapsulate so much of the change that you argue is happening through this time. So could you introduce our listeners a little bit to your argument? Like, what were some of these broad changes in how Christmas is depicted? And the context is a really huge question, but could we talk about maybe particularly like the political context of mid-century America that might have shaped some of these things?
Sure, of course. So we'll take context first and then the film breakdowns. So the political context for this is that we are in the post-war period. In 1946 is when It's a Wonderful Life comes out, same year as The Best Years of Our Lives. And we are in a period of thinking about American identity and America on a global stage. And in 1947, the Truman administration starts to introduce some anti-communist kind of legislation and executive orders. where we have a loyalty order coming through that federal workers have to declare that they are not in any sort of subversive group that would be considered against American values and institutions and agencies. And we see a real kind of ramping up of anti-communist sentiments. And in this period, communist is not very well defined. So a lot of people can be considered quote unquote communist. And accusations start to fly around. The House Committee on Un-American Activities ramps up their activity. And the FBI is secretly investigating Hollywood, all in that 1947 period. After HUAC, the House Committee on Un-American Activities, subpoenas individuals, filmmakers, writers, directors from Hollywood to testify to Congress, and 10 of them refuse. They're held in contempt of Congress, and then Hollywood's reaction to that, the elites in Hollywood form the Hollywood Blacklist. So that's all kind of the context. The rest of the 15-year period from that point on is the Hollywood Blacklist period. The Blacklist doesn't have a formal end date, but we can kind of place it in 1960 when Dalton Trumbo gets writer's credits on Spartacus, Dalton Trumbo being one of those Hollywood 10 who were held in contempt of Congress. So it's a period of suspicion, and the phrase guilty by suspicion is thrown around in this period a lot. And there's a lot of tension and pressure on the cultural industry to react and to conform and to oust any leftist ideas from their media. Not all media in this period, not all Hollywood films do that. That's an important caveat. But the American Christmas films that are coming out of this period, which is what I focus on, do fall into a pattern where we see a manipulation of the American Christmas holiday for kind of socially conservative ends. And what I mean by that is that we have a shift from kind of communalism to individualism that, in my opinion, is kind of counter a lot of American values. So these earlier films from 46 and 47 have more Dickensian elements. They follow a Christmas Carol kind of model of tackling poverty and social problems, thinking about our communities and what Christmas can mean to our communities if we kind of band together and work together for goodwill. After 1947, we don't see that again until the 1980s. In Hollywood releases. Instead, we get a shift into musicals and romances and farces, and we get the development of the kind of formula for those films that is still in use today in Hallmark Christmas films and like Lifetime and Netflix and Amazon, all of those kind of like B-list low budget Christmas romances really follow this style of this social conservatism that was established in the 1950s as the kind of tropes of that period. So we go from George Bailey in It's a Wonderful Life needing $8,000 to keep the building and loan open so that his neighbors can have homes to will they or won't they get together by Christmas Eve? And that's a huge jump, like a massive jump in just a few short years. And then in 1960 with The Apartment and 1961, we have another a further shift in kind of tone. It's still quite individualistic, but the tonal shift in those films becomes a bit more aggressive, a bit grittier for that more modern decade that we're entering in the 1960s. So that's kind of the overall arch is this departure from Dickens. We get fully away from Santa Claus films as well. Won't leave Miracle on 34th Street out there. That is what the book is named after, is selling out Santa in this kind of McCarthyist way in favor of individualistic films and identities over the community.
It's such a fascinating argument, and it deepened both my understanding. I hope this doesn't come too out of left field. It deepened my understanding and appreciation for the Charlie Brown Christmas special, which is something you're
Yes.
introduced to as a child, or I was anyway, before I sort of understood even what it was really responding to. And so, like that, it was a really interesting sort of like it helped me think, rethink a lot of my opinions about like the Christmas media, both that I have loved since I was a child and like the new things that I have encountered more recently with my younger, nieces and nephews. It's a really fascinating look at like American history, but then also like just like how an understanding of history can help deepen your appreciation of film, like if you are a person who already loves movies,
Yeah, and I really appreciate you saying that. Some people who I talk to about it are like, thanks, you ruined my favorite Christmas film. And that's not my intent. It's really not my intent. I don't think I do that. But I do argue that we should be actively watching these things and really thinking about what we consume, especially at Christmas when we're doing it kind of annually and we're not really paying attention to the films. It's important to think about those and just have an idea of what we're watching. So I love that. The idea that it would reframe Charlie Brown Christmas for you, and that that's something that you could then talk to your nieces and nephews, the young people in your life, to really be like, what are the messages here? What are we getting from this? And how can we bring that forward to think about other media?
First Charlie Brown Christmas, then we talk about Paw Patrol. So
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your time, your research, and your book with us. What is on the horizon for you? I know you literally just finished this book and you're probably recovering, but have you thoughts about your future research?
I do. It's actually centered on Revue Roulette is the next project that I'm thinking about doing is a collaborative project with other scholars and experts weighing in on how we watch media and what we do with the way we think about media. I'm also working on a second book project about nostalgia, which is something that I definitely touch on in this book about Christmas, which is so heavily kind of connotated with nostalgia, especially for the 50s. And yeah, that one's about nostalgia and looks at the 1950s through other media since then.
Nice. Well, I look forward to both of those things. Yeah, they
Thank
sound
you.
great.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're so welcome. Okay, listeners, you have homework now. Please check out Selling Out Santa, Hollywood Christmas Films in the Age of McCarthy, and check out Revue Roulette 2. I'm going to put that link to Black and White and Red All Over in the notes. All right, thank you for joining us. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.